Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd Canto, Chapter 10, Text 8. Padmakosham tadabhisya bhagavat karma chodita etam yabhangshid urudha shiddha bhavyam dvisaptadha. That's the verse not yet read. Padmakosham, the world of the lotus. Tada, then. Abhisha, entering into. Bhagavad, by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Karma, in activities. Chodita, being encouraged by. Ekam, one. Yabhangshit, divided into. Urutha, great division. Chita, three divisions. Pavyam, capable of further creation. Visaptata, 14 divisions. Thus engaged in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Brahma entered into the whirl of the lotus, and as it spread all over the universe, he divided it into three divisions of worlds, and later into 14 divisions. Whoa. Powerful. Again. Good enough. That's probably better, is it? Okay. Etavan jiva lokasya samstha bheda samahritaha karmasya hyanimittasya vipaka parameshchasau etavan, up to this, jiva lokasya, of the planets, inhabited by the living entities. Sangstha, hedaha, different situations of habitation. Samahritaha, performed completely. Dharmasya, of religion. He, certainly. Anamittasya, of causelessness. Vipakaha, mature stage. Parameshti, the highest personality in the universe. Aso, that. Lord Brahma is the most exalted personality in the universe because of his causeless devotional service unto the Lord in mature transcendental knowledge. He therefore created all the 14 planetary divisions for inhabitation by the different types of living entities. Purport. The Supreme Lord is the reservoir of all the qualities of the living entities. The conditioned souls in the material world reflect only part of those qualities, and therefore they are sometimes called pratibimbas. These pratibimba living entities, as parts and parcels of the Supreme Lord, have inherited different proportions of his original qualities. And in terms of their inheritance of those qualities, they appear as different species of life and are accommodated in different planets according to the plan of Brahma. Brahma is the creator of the three worlds, namely the lower planets, called the Patala Lokas, the middle planets, called the Pur Lokas, and the upper planets, called the Swar Lokas. Still higher planets, such as Maharloka, Tapaloka, Satyaloka, and Brahmaloka, do not dissolve in the devastating water. This is because of the causeless devotional service rendered unto the Lord by their inhabitants, whose existence continues up to the end of Dwiparartha time, when they are generally liberated from the chain of birth and death in the material world. Om Agyanatimirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Milita Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovrishtam Sthapitam Jena Bhutale Shayam Bhuta Padamayam Tathati Shamanikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Vita Padakamam Shri Guru Shri Rupam Shavrajatam Shahadana Raghunatam Vitam Stam Sativam Sajaitam Sadhutam Krishna Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Rama Krishna Param Shahadana Vadita Sri Vishakam Vitam He Krishna, Karma Sanibhava, Dina Bhagavad Gavatpate, Govesha Govika Kanta, Raha Kanta Mostate, Tapta Kanchana Gopamani, Rade Vinda Vaishuzi, Rishabha Mustayadevi, Karmani Haripriye, Vansha Kotana Vyasaka, Kripāsaṁ samudhyayena ca patitānāṁ pāvanevyo vaiṣṇavevyo namo namaḥ Śrī Kṛṣṇa Caitanya Prabhu Nityānanda Śrī Advaita Gadādhara Śrīvāsadi Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Padma Kosham Taravishya Bhagavad Paramachodha Ekam Vibhamshi Uruta Tritha Bhavyam Dvisaputha. Etavan Jiva Lokasya Samstha Bheda Samagata Dharmasya Yanamittasya Vipaka Parameshyasa. The engineering of the universe is beginning. Lord Brahma enters the whirl, the central portion, he enters into the lotus, and then Karmachodita, being inspired by the Lord, he divides everything. He sees the lotus spreading all over the universe, and he divides it into first into three divisions and then into 14. This is how you engineer things. First you divide things into big sections and then further into smaller sections. So the upper, middle, and lower planetary systems, and then finally he divides those into 14 worlds, Dvishaptata. And the worlds are described as jiva-lokasya, the jiva-loka, the place of for the living beings. That means that the planets are not just rocks floating in space, but they're intended for various kinds of living beings. Jiva-loka, samstha, Bheda, different kinds of places. Just like city planning, here in Mayapur they've made a big guest house and a small guest house and a Gauranga Kutir and why? For different kinds of guests. They're all living entities, but still we make distinctions that these are VIPs, VVIPs, paying customers, lower income pilgrims, So according to the different kinds of people who we expect to come, they've created different kinds of buildings. Senior brahmacharya building, not so senior brahmacharya building, householder quarters, brahmacharya's way over there, householder's way over there. For different kinds of inhabitants. So Lord Brahma also creates the different worlds for different kinds of living beings. Actually, living beings are of one kind. They're of the same nature as Krishna. They're all spiritual in quality. But they're described as pratibimba. Pratibimba means reflections. They're like reflections of Krishna. And according to their karma, they reflect different qualities. Lord Brahma reflects all the qualities of Krishna up to, what is that? 76%. What percentage is Brahma? 64 qualities, and he has 50, right? 50 out of 64, right? So whatever the number is percentage-wise, somebody who's good at that can... So he's got 50 of the qualities, which is the maximum for the conditioned souls, or for the jiva souls. From that, we get Lord Shiva, who's not one of the jivas, then Narayana, and finally Krishna, who has all of the 64 qualities in full. The Lord Brahma has 50 of those qualities in tiny proportion, according to his size. And the other living entities have other qualities. Some of them have different features. The Lord has infinite varieties. He's the reservoir of all qualities. And the different living beings have different kinds of qualities. Some of them have the ability to fly. Some of them have the tremendous fighting capability. Some of them have very sharp vision. Some of them have this, some of them have that. They have different characteristics. And those characteristics, unfortunately, are manifested in terms of the three qualities of material nature. Krishna's characteristics are all manifestations of Vishuddha Sattva, absolute goodness. But our qualities are manifested in terms of goodness, passion, and ignorance. So according to the proportion and according to the according to the desires of the living entities and according to their past credit or debit, they're given particular bodies. And they're given particular bodies in particular places all over the universe. And Srila Prabhupada elsewhere, actually Lord Kapildev elsewhere, in third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, gives evidence for such things. He says, we see it on this planet. We see on this planet that every place is inhabited. If you go to the tropics, they're inhabited. You go to the Arctic regions, they're inhabited. You go to the air, it's inhabited. To the water, it's inhabited. You look in a crack in the sidewalk, it's inhabited by so many living entities. As soon as there's a little crack in the concrete, some plant tries to grow, some ants try to burrow in there. Every place is inhabited by living beings. I saw some article many years ago that the scientists had drilled down way under the into the ice in the Arctic Circle, and way, way down they found some living entities. And some primitive living entities, some algae or something. I think they were blue. It was pretty cold up there, so cold algae. Anyway, they were there. So wherever you go, there's living entities. And they're placed according to different situations. Take the human beings. Some of them are living in very beautiful places with beautiful weather and the ocean and beautiful weather and nice fruits and vegetables and everything growing. And then other living entities are living in England. There are so many different places where the living beings are blessed or condemned to live. Some people live out in the desert, some people live on glaciers, and they're different according to their karma. According to their karma. Some of them live in hellish conditions. What constitutes a hellish place changes from time to time, depending what human beings are doing to one another, or what nature is doing to the human beings. Right now, Iraq is pretty hellish. A while back, it was some other place that was pretty hellish, where they, we hear about hellfire and brimstone, people, living in fire and so on. These things are created by men to inflict suffering on other men. So then hell is seen on this planet, and heaven is seen on this planet also. Places where there's every kind of heavenly enjoyment according as far as possible. So if it's found on this planet, then why not elsewhere? People think, oh, there's no such thing as hell. Hell is made up by some creepy old patriarchs to keep people in fear. But we see hell on this planet. We see heaven on this planet. So why not elsewhere in the universe? First of all, why should the rest of the universe be vacant? Just this planet is packed with living entities. Every inch of it is full of living beings. And as soon as you get off this planet, it's all empty. No. All the planets are inhabited. They're created purposefully as residential quarters for different living beings. And then, according to where you go, there's different standards of living. But a brahma bhuvana loka punar martinarja. Even if you go to the highest planet, they're all places of birth and death, punar martin. So, padmam upecha tukantya punar janmana vidyate. If one goes back to Godhead, back to Krishna, then there's no need of coming back. One can stay there. Tad dhamma paramam mama. The material world, with all its great variety of living quarters, it's just varieties. Actually, heavenly or hellish, it's all variety of hell. A balave mande sabram. Kaviraj Goswami says, Dvaite bhadra bhadra gyan e manodara. By mental concoction, we think that some place is good and some place is bad. But actually, it's all bad. I live in a good place of birth and death. What's so good? You suffer in a different way, I suffer in a different way. But it's all suffering. So why should we live in such a place? That's not natural for the living being, but on account of forgetfulness of Krishna. He tries to be sanskar, he tries to have a well-established place in the material world where nothing is permanently established. And therefore he's frustrated. His real business is to go back to Godhead, where the permanence is to be found, where things are actually substantial, where enjoyment is not a mental concoction. Here it's a mental concoction because it's based on a false premise. Just if I start barking orders, men, do this, do that, do this, do that. It's all based on the premise that I'm Napoleon or something. I may have a great time giving orders, but ultimately it's ridiculous
because I'm not Napoleon, I don't have any power, it's just a joke. I start writing, girls, do this. Men, do that. So we're trying to push the material world around so that we can be the controllers and the enjoyers. But the whole premise is false. And sometimes we say, oh, it's working, see? But it's not working. We're just being booted around by the material nature. And sometimes we're in one illusion, sometimes another illusion. Sometimes we think that we've got it real good, and then the next moment, oh no, it's real bad. But this is all manodharma, mental concoction. It's all bad. It's all bad because it's all existing, or apparently existing, by the arrangement of the illusory energy of the Lord. And it all entails so much trouble. Actually, the whole trouble is separateness from Krishna, or disconnection from Krishna. And on that ground, so much trouble is there. So our business is to get out of this trouble, to get out of the clutches of the material energy, out from under the rule of time, which wears everything down and takes everything away, and go back to God, back to Krishna. Okay, any questions? First editions of Srimad Bhagavatam had these charts of the planetary systems, and the later editions didn't.
So, how can we? We're just trying to picture the universe, you know, for the eventually to be a Vedic planetary. And so, is it hard to put? Is there any way to put these planets the way you described into picture form, chart form?
Yeah, you can just get an old edition of Srimad Bhagavatam with the pictures, or find a new edition where they put the pictures back. These things happen mostly because of book distributors and the number of pictures that you can afford when you're trying to hit a certain street price. I think that's what's going on. Or else some sort of error. There's nothing wrong with the original pictures. They've been attacked at various times by people trying to find who think they found one error or another. And time and again, they've resisted the attack. They've shown themselves to be faithful to the text. At one point somebody was saying, oh, this is you've made this too high, it's supposed to be this many yojanas from the sun, but they weren't reading carefully, it's this many yojanas from the rays of the sun. It was all checked very carefully the first time, and we got it right the first time. How about that? The charts are correct. As far as anyone has been able to determine. So then the only thing that's not correct is if the charts are being left out of later printings. As far as I know, it's the policy of the BBT to have those charts in there. And if some printing got left out, it shouldn't be. Now, just because you have the charts, that doesn't really make it all that easy to envision the universe, though, does it?
Start.
It gives you a start. Yeah, it gives you at least a start. But Sukadeva Goswami told Parikshit Maharaj that, you know, even if you had the life of Brahma, you really wouldn't be able to get all this. He explains something about the universal construction. Quite some detail, where the mountains are, where the rivers are, where Manasotra mountain is with the sun rotating, where Sumeru is, where the different islands and oceans are, the ocean of salt water, the ocean of yogurt, the ocean of liquor, the ocean of cane juice, so many oceans with islands, concentric islands, and then each island is surrounded by an ocean twice the thickness of the previous one, and so on. So he's described quite a bit about the universe, but then finally he says, you know, this is just an indication. If you had the life of Brahma, you still wouldn't be able to understand it all. I don't even know if Brahma understands it all. He's inspired by Krishna, and sometimes when you're inspired, you do things and you don't even know how you do them. Don't you have that experience? You do something, you don't even know how you did it, exactly what it is you did. People say, that's great. You say, I don't know what it is. So that's Krishna consciousness. When one is inspired by Krishna, then he can do wonderful things and not even know how he did it. Then not even know what it is. And maybe not even know that he did it. But when Krishna inspires, these things become possible. So Brahma got inspiration from Krishna, and the followers of the Sankirtan movement can get that same inspiration from Krishna. How is that? By dedicating themselves. Brahma was very serious. He dedicated himself, penance, austerity, serious introspection and meditation, seriously tried to find out the absolute truth. And then finally, Krishna just gave him mercy. All right, let's do it. Let's get the universe going. Krishna inspired. So similarly, if we get that inspiration from Krishna, then something is possible. It was possible for Brahma because of causeless devotional service. Dharmasya hyanmitasya. Ultimately not by any amount of pious activities or anything else, but by the causeless mercy of the Lord and his devotee, one gets the seed of devotional service, and here it's described as vipaka. Vipaka means mature. Like pakka, we get our Hindi and other languages. Pakka means mature. So vipaka, same word root. Brahma's devotional service became mature, then he could do it. He was a devotee all along, but he had to do something for maturing in devotional service, and in the mature stage he was able to do this wonderful service of creating all these planetary systems. So we have to also endeavor. But it's not exactly our endeavor that makes everything possible. It's finally the causeless mercy of Krishna. Otherwise you could endeavor for millions of years and accomplish nothing. But if Krishna becomes pleased, then beyond all imagination, wonderful things become possible. Yes?
What happens in Brahma's life sometimes when he doesn't do it?
What happens in Brahma's life sometimes when?
When he cannot secret liberation and he cannot.
Could we turn off all of these things? I meant to ask you that beforehand. Yeah, all the phones and gadgets should just be turned off. Thank you. But none to go by. I can't give you a hard time. Thank you. Yes. I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you. If someone coughs, then you disappear. Yes?
I heard, I don't know if it's right, but once we all have been Brahma. So it means that we didn't reach the goal.
Yeah, someplace if we were Brahma, we took a wrong turn somewhere. Because Brahma is supposed to go back to Godhead, and this doesn't look like back to Godhead to me. So. Everyone makes mistakes.
In which stage of his life do you think? He didn't make the right prayers to Krishna? Did he?
Oh, we'll have a hard time trying to trace out where Brahma made his mistakes. We have enough trouble seeing where we make our own mistakes. Yes. Let's see what's stated here. Satya Loka and Brahma Loka. You listen very carefully. Yes, they're both mentioned and they're both the same. Satya Loka means the abode of Brahma. Brahma Loka means the same thing. Sometimes Brahma Loka means the spiritual world, the world of Brahma. But here it doesn't. It means the material, highest planet. And Satya Loka is the same thing. Careful listening. Thank you. Yes.
What is Srila Prabhupada's official ISKCON Siddhanta about the origin of soul?
What is the Srila Prabhupada's and ISKCON's official Siddhanta about what?
Origin of soul.
Origin of soul. Well, for the official, excuse me? This is a novel question. I've never come across this one before. As far as ISKCON's official position, you can look in the official ISKCON publications or something and see what they've officially said. My official position is that the living entity has fallen from Cincinnati. It's a city in the east coast of the United States. But Govinda Maharaj disagrees with me very strenuously. He says the living entity fell from Nashville. Now, as far as what Srila Prabhupada says, he says various things. In general, he says that the living entity is originally with Krishna, but due to forgetfulness, he falls to this material world. That's his general statement on the matter. And he bases that on Srimad Bhagavatam, where essentially it's said that actually even now we're in the spiritual world, but on account of impure consciousness, we're imagining that we're someplace else. If you try to figure out the history of where the living entity fell from and when, you're going to have an awfully hard time. First of all, because there's no time. When we say when the living entity fell, we're immediately in time. And if you're in the spiritual world, time doesn't exist. So somebody who wants to put together like a brain teasers for kids can work with this. You know, if you're originally someplace where there's no time, and then you go to someplace where there's time, when did you go there? Or if you're originally someplace where there's no time, where there's time, and then you go someplace where there's no time, were you always in the place where there's no time, or were you never in the place where there's time? When Narada goes to the spiritual world, was he always there? When he comes to the material world, does that mean he's always here? You can really have fun with time, because time... places limits on things, and as soon as you're outside those limits, you can't talk in terms of time anymore. Or you can, but it doesn't have the same meaning. You can talk about time, but time is endless in the spiritual world, or time is endless present. There are no divisions of past, present, and future. So then, when did, past tense, the living entity fall to the spirit, to the material world? It becomes a very difficult question to answer. Apart from that, there are also statements that he never falls from the spiritual world, that no one ever falls from the spiritual world. Jiva Goswami has statements to that effect, that no one ever falls from Vaikuntha. So if you're ever bored or lacking engagement, then you can try and figure this one out. And then once you've figured it out, you can publish your results and they'll be wrong, no matter what. Yes. practicing penance and austerity is not usually a way to attract Krishna. No, Krishna is attracted. Just like our devotees, they go out and distribute books. There's so much austerity that they undergo. They have no, no place to stay. They have no regular arrangements for eating. They have to approach all these horrible people and try to ask them to do something that they don't want to do. They have, a lot of austerity. They get insulted. They get, sometimes they get beat up even. Not in India usually, but in other places. It's a lot of austerity. Carrying book bags around for hours and hours at a time. Dodging police in some countries. Risking your life in some countries. It's a lot of austerity. Or in any of our services, devotees are cooking for hours and hours and hours and hours and hours and hours, or they're doing things, they're getting up on the altar to worship the deities wearing a little thin something or other in the middle of January. And everybody else is in the temple with five layers of everything, and the pujaris are wearing some little skimpy chada. Please Krishna, they're undergoing so many austerities. Prabhupada underwent so many austerities to start the Krishna consciousness movement. So it's not just official austerities. We don't just stand there and, on one foot in the Himalayas with the snow falling on our heads, counting off the years, when will the Lord be pleased with me? That's not the sort of austerity we usually go for. But in the course of one's service, there's naturally austerity. For the brahmacharis, brahmachari life is austerity. For our householders, equally austere, if not more so. Performing one's prescribed duties means being willing to undergo austerity. So it is there. And if a person's unwilling to undergo austerity, then it will be hard to advance in devotional service. He doesn't want to follow the rules, he doesn't want to get up in the morning, he doesn't want to do this, he doesn't want to do that, because it's too hard, or because he doesn't want to. So then how will we make advancement? These four regular principles, they're the minimum austerities for those who are initiated. No gambling, no intoxication, meat eating, and losing sight. That's a lot of austerity for some people. More than some people can even take on. They can't even imagine how these people are. And then on from there. But it's not simply the austerity, but it's the fact that this austerity is undertaken to please Krishna. Otherwise, why do we do these things? Why go out and distribute these books under difficult conditions? Why serve the deity, accepting so much trouble? Why do this? Why do that? It's to please Krishna. So then, naturally, just like if in family life, if the wife goes through a lot of trouble to cook something for the husband or do something for the husband, becomes grateful. She went through so much trouble. Went through so much trouble for me. Becomes very grateful. So Krishna is not ungrateful when he sees devotees are going through to all great lengths to serve him. He's pleased. Something else? Talking animals and so on mentioned in the Puranas, we don't come across anymore. So the question is why? One thing is that they still may be talking, we may not be listening. That's also possible. They do a lot of talking. I've noticed that the animals and so on, they do a lot of talking, but I have difficulty making out what they say. I have difficulty even making out what the Russians say, so. And that's when it's in English. also I would think that it's exceptional. It's not that every animal in the Puranic times was walking around talking to people. Excuse me, tell me where I can find some food. I don't gather that it's like that. But under certain exceptional circumstances, the animals are granted the ability to talk or communicate. Otherwise, they're referred to elsewhere, again, the Puranas as being dumb, as not having that capability. So it must have been extraordinary. All sorts of wonderful things in the Puranas. All right, I have to stop. Thank you, all glories to Shri. Oh, thank you very much. I'm there.